Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's politics podcast. Momentum is catching on in the Conservative Party, with Michael Portillo now giving his benediction to Jacob Rees-Mogg as a potential leader of the party. He's also topped a Conservative home poll amongst grassroots members, so is something finally going on? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth to discuss. So, Katie, we know the Momentum phenomenon. We've seen young men at Tory party conference with Momentum tattoos on their chest. It's all been a bit of a joke. Now and again, people ask, can it be more than that? Has this thinking changed significantly?
I think what we're seeing is there's lots of talk, obviously, particularly on the Spectator cover this week, about Theresa May's future and whether she can step it to the plate. And every time you talk about the Prime Minister's survival, talk wanders to what would happen if she were to go and who the runners and riders would be. There's no candidate, really, that is seen as an obvious one, but the one that is continually favoured by the members is Jacob Rees-Mogg, and he seems to very consistently now top Con Home polls. And the fact that this is a Con Home poll very near to, like, I wouldn't say a likely leadership contest in the next, you know, month or so, but is getting closer to a reality, and he's still topping them, I think does tell you that if he were to make it into the final two, there's a very high chance he would be picked by the members. The issue, which is why it makes it less likely, like Labour, where you're to get a candidate like that, is because the way the voting rounds work out is you vote to get rid of a candidate at each round, the MPs do. So they, it may be that the parliamentary party, who are probably colder on Mogg, would not let him progress to the final two.
But James, we're talking about a backbencher who's got no ministerial experience, who's got a media profile, certainly a social media following. But can we really be seriously talking about him being a cabinet member, let alone the prime minister? I mean, surely this does not happen to parties in government. It might happen to opposition parties. You might get somebody like Jeremy Corbyn becoming Labour leader, or somebody like David Cameron becoming opposition leader. But you cannot go from the backbenches to prime minister in government.
I think Jacob Rees-Mogg's attraction at the moment is he's not bound by collective responsibility. So, for example, on Brexit, he's allowed to be completely clear about what he wants to do. And I suspect that on that issue, he is pretty closely aligned with the members. He's also a character. He's distinctive. There's a lovely line in Adrian Mordridge's column in The Economist today, and he says Jacob Rees-Mogg is a peacock in a coop of battery chickens. And he does stand out like that. Now, personally, I think Jacob Rees-Mogg is aware of his limitations. I think at the moment his plan is not to run for leader, but to back Boris Johnson. But I think that, you know, the Jacob Rees-Mogg popularity tells you something. There is a yearning. There is a sort of Tory view that to beat Corbyn, they need their own version of Corbyn. And that Jacob Rees-Mogg in some ways does produce that. I also think he has, I think he clearly has some kind of authenticity to him. And he has a charm to him, you know. I mean, you know, I think there is something what's the name of the woman who won Ireland's Celebrity? Get me out of here.
Tough.
Yeah, she said that he was a sex god. You know, that is not something that is often said about.
She apologised to him for objectifying him.
But there is he has some presence about him, and that, you know. I'm not going to say that I think Jacob Rees-Mogg is a sex god, but I will say this, that when you see him on TV, you know, in the kind of constant world of 24-hour news, when you're at work and you see politician after politician on the screen, Jacob Rees-Mogg is one of those politicians who you think you put the sound up to hear what he's going to say.
Right. Now, what I can't work out is why are we having this conversation? There isn't a Tory leadership contest. The Mogg phenomenon, the Mogg interest, isn't appreciably greater than it was 3 or 4 months ago when people were laughing about it. So, Katie, are MPs actually entertaining this prospect? Or is this simply a reflection of frustration in Theresa May, that the conversation has gone into who will succeed her, and when this results in no answer, then we repeat? So I'd stick with Theresa May and just repeat the cycle.
Well, there's definitely that. I think, I mean, James obviously does touch on this in his cover story, but I think as MPs are kind of going on and they're very miserable at the moment, whether it's the lack of domestic agenda or the indecision on Brexit, each day they are saying, you know, could it actually be worse if we were to get May and take a chance in a leadership contest? At the moment, they still think it probably would be worse to do that. But every day that goes by, I think it's looking more appealing. So they start playing games from, you know, their fantasy cabinet or, you know, fantasy leadership and working out who would go. There's no obvious person. No one agrees. But yet, Mogg is definitely the person that the members care about the most.
I think Katie's right, though. I do struggle to see how Jacob Rees-Mogg could get the 106 MPs he would need to get on the ballot. And I think he knows that. I think what Jacob Rees-Mogg do is making sure that his support is of sufficient value that, you know, he can trade it for the option of a proper big job in the cabinet.
Now, the Mogg is playing while the cat is away. The cat's in China right now. So, Katie, what news from the front there?
Well, Theresa May has been trying to put her plans for a global Britain into action across in China. I think she's been given the nickname Auntie May. Auntie May, yeah, by the Chinese. And I think...
Is this a good thing?
I mean...
I suppose it's better than me, the hammer.
The Chinese media are portraying it as a good thing. One of the family.
I would say it's one of the nicer things she's been called this week. It's going okay for her. But yeah, and they're talking, and obviously Liam Fox, who's very loyal to her and a Brexiteer, so that helps her, has been on the trip with her, and he's been kind of trying to bat her corner from China as Tory MPs have been circulating in a slightly, you know, vulture-like manner to prey on her. But I think she flies back, and she gets back today, and I think she's coming back to a bit of a mess. And this China trip was good because it looked like she was doing something. I think it's notable that I think in the Chinese media reports, they were quite happy that she didn't raise human rights, you know, abuses or questions publicly. I think Number 10 says she did so privately. The trip seemed to be a diplomatic success. But ultimately, she's coming back to a mess.
And James, none of these trade deals with China will be possible unless Britain leaves the customs union. We had thought that was going to happen, but the FT today has become the latest newspaper to say that there are active plans inside the government to keep us, if not in the customs union, then in a customs union with the EU. How seriously should we take this?
So the government have been quick to try and pour cold water on this story, but that these sometimes... As a journalist, when respected people, you know, George Parker, Tim Shipman, write stories like this, they don't get these things wrong. You know, there is clearly are people in white who are still thinking about this. Now, the argument goes like this. Most of the UK economy is services. So why don't we just stay in the customs union with the EU for goods? That would make all that kind of trade simpler. The customs union doesn't require free movement, so it's clearly compatible with the referendum result. Now, the problem with it is this. Is in trade deals, you generally give something to get something else. So if the UK stayed in a goods customs union with the EU, it would be very hard to do a trade deal with China. Because we'd go to the Chinese and say, would you please open up your service markets to our services? And the Chinese would say, okay, we'll do that in exchange for you opening up to our manufactured goods. Right. And we'd say, but we can't do that because we're in a customs union with the EU. Now, unless you had something that I can't think of any example of this. You'd have to, for this not to be the effect, you'd have to have a kind of customs union that allowed the UK to set its own tariffs and make its own deals on everything, which I can't think of any customs union that works like that, because that's not how a customs union works. Now, it would clearly be sensible for the UK to have the most sophisticated and most developed customs arrangement with the EU to ensure that you don't have queues at the borders, that the things that goods can flow as freely and as frictionlessly as possible across borders. But if you stay in a customs union with the EU, I find it impossible to see how you could have your own trade policy.
I think it's interesting timing too with the release of or the leak of these reports this week, which was the Brexit.
The leaked Brexit report, which basically restated the Treasury's Project Fear figures from before the referendum, although shaved off a bit. And there was some controversy, Katie, as to whether the Prime Minister herself commissioned these figures. Do we know anything more? All this week we've had a row about how they came about, how you could end up having Steve Baker, a Brexit minister, trashing his own department's forecasts. Are we any clearer on the genesis of these things at the end of this week?
Well, yesterday was pretty extraordinary because at the dispatch box you basically had Jacob Rees-Mogg asking Steve Baker, is it correct, Governor Minister, that you heard that these reports were basically a weapon by the Treasury? And you have a Governor Minister not denying that. And since then, he's had to row back on it slightly and said that maybe he misunderstood what he heard at this lunch. But it's just a strange level when over the Dispatch, which you're openly kind of having this department warfare basically over Brexit, and this feeling that the Treasury is just doing everything it can to get like a softer deal.
And James, I mean, departments have always been at war in Whitehall. I remember in the Blair Brown years, the Department of Health and the Treasury were at, you know, pretty much fighting harder than Labour and Tories were. But government members have tended to deny it. So maybe they're just being a little bit more honest about how government is working or not working at the moment.
I think one of the problems is there is a, because there is a kind of vacuum of political leadership at the moment, officials are being cast into quite an uncomfortable position of having to do probably more than they should be doing. And that's not because they want to be doing it. It's because there isn't the political leadership that would get them out of this hole. You know, you have to feel for Ollie Robbins, who is, you know, the Prime Minister's Sherpa in all this, running her Europe unit in the Cabinet Office. Because I don't get the impression from anyone in government that he's had a secret set of instructions from her. But he's having to have all these conversations. We know he's had conversations with Michel Barnier, the EU's chief negotiator. And I'm not for a second saying that he is in any way trying to deliberately overstep his mark. But it's a very difficult situation when you're in those conversations and there isn't a clear line from the elected government of a day on what the position should be. And, you know, that means that when Mr. Barnier says things to you as a civil servant, you know, how are you meant to compose your facial features in response? Because you don't quite know. No, I mean, you don't quite know where the UK government is at on all this stuff.
Yeah, I do think if you take a step back and you look at that leaked report, which basically one of the things it was saying it was that even if you get this US trade deal, if you get all these other ones, it wouldn't cover for what you're going to miss for not being in a customs union. Yeah. And then obviously you're getting these obviously sourced articles appearing in papers saying why a customs union is a good idea. Like, put two and two together, there's obviously a concentrated effort coming from part of the government to try and get Britain to bounce into having a customs union.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store, or to the magazine itself from just £1 a week. That's a trial 3 months for print, iPad, website, the whole shebang, on spectator.co.uk/subscribe. Thanks also to Nick Pilton, who produced this podcast.